Good morning. My name is Konrad Opelt. I'm from Fraunhofer IWKS, and I welcome you to my talk about sustainable manufacturing of neodymium iron-borne magnets with optimized heavy rare earth content, the two-powder method approach. And I'm studying material science at Technical University of Darmstadt. Afterwards, I joined as a research fellow at Fraunhofer IWKS and the Department of Magnetic Materials. Then I decided also to do my PhD. I finished this end of last year and sustained my deputy head of the Department of Magnetic Materials. So at the beginning, I want to give a quick introduction about Fraunhofer Society in general and about our institutes. Then I want to talk about the challenges in the context of rare earths, and also if you're talking about challenges in terms of rare earths and criticality, we also have to talk about recycling concepts and reuse. And then I will come to the main topic of my talk, the sustainable manufacturing of neodymium iron-borne magnets, and especially there I want to highlight the two-powder method approach. And at the end, I want to summarize my talk and give a quick outlook. So Fraunhofer Society is operating worldwide. So the headquarters in Munich, Germany. We have more than 76 institutes and research facilities. We have about 32,000 employees and an annual business of approximately 3.4 billion euro. Nevertheless, main of the institutes are located in Germany. And we are localized here in the federal states of Hesse and Bavaria. So we have two locations, one in Hanau, and the other one directly connected in Alzenau. And the colleagues in Alzenau are dealing with bioeconomy and digitalization of resources. So they're doing, for example, life cycle assessments, life cost assessments. And in our location, Hanau, we have a department of energy materials, which are working on recycling processes for solar cells, for fuel cells, for batteries. And even also magnetic materials are also kind of energy material. It's a very important topic, and that's why we also have an own department which are only dealing with magnetic materials, especially the rare earth element-based sintered magnets. Yes, so the research at Fraunhofer at WQS in terms of magnetic materials is that we have three main streams. So one is the recycling and also the dismantling of applications where you can find the magnets. Another topic is, which is the main topic of this talk, is more efficient manufacturing process. And also, of course, we are working on substitution of critical elements. So maybe, I don't know, increase some light rare earth elements like cerium, lanthanum, or also working on rare earth free phases like manganum alumina or iron nitride, iron phosphate, and all the other materials. And of course, if you're doing material science, you need strong analytics to really know what you did in your research. So here you can see our pilot line and also our biggest device, which is one part of the pilot line, is here the strip caster. And yeah, there our pilot line is manufactured that we can produce batches between 10 up to 50 kilogram of the rare earth materials. And yes, here's some overuse about analytics in terms of chemical analysis, microstructural analysis, and also, of course, the magnetic or the material properties. Here's some overview about our reference projects. So on the top, you can see some European projects, then also some national projects. And yeah, more or less one sort is about recycling, the other about dismantling, the next one about is about substitution or manufacturing processes. And of course, we have a lot of industrial processes, but of course, I can't show them here. Yes, now I want to talk about the challenges in the context of the rare earths. So neodymium iron-borne based magnets show the highest energy density and room temperature. And if we look about the energy density with kind of the figure of merit for permanent magnets, you can see that if you have such a small magnet, you wouldn't even need large more volumes of all the other on the market available permanent magnets to have the same magnetic properties or the same energy density. And that's why neodymium iron-borne magnets are used in a wide range of applications and in a wide variety of quantities. So you can find some minor amounts in mobile phones. You can find between 1 or up to 3 kilograms of neodymium iron-borne magnet material and the traction models of electrical vehicles. Then you can find some tons in medical devices like this MRI scanner. And then the state-of-the-art offshore wind turbines, you can find up to 70 tons of this neodymium iron-borne magnets. However, more than 90% are delivered from China, so here is obviously a large dependency. And then if we look on the market of Europe, there the neodymium iron-borne market is driven by a rising demand for e-mobility and wind power. And forecasts say that the demand for neodymium iron-borne in the EU will increase from 10 kilotons to 55 kilotons between the year 2020 and 2050. And if we have a look on the import volume of 2023, Germany imported about 9,000 tons of magnets, which is a worth of about 700 million euro. And with this, Germany was the second largest importer worldwide after Japan. And here, for example, you can see the supply chain of rare earth in general. And if we are looking on the oxide mining, there we can also see that China has more than half of the value already. And if you go further in the value, so the oxide processing, metallization, and permanent magnets, China has a market share with more than 90%. And also the ongoing trade war between the US and China also increase or underline the very criticality of the rare earth permanent magnets. But also beyond its economic impacts and reasons, we also can or have to think about ecological reasons. So if you think about mining of rare earths, you also have to deal with byproducts of heavy metals, a lot of wastewater, and also of radioactive elements. That's also why the European Union get into action, and the Critical Raw Materials Act is signed, and especially Article 28 and Article 29 are really forcing this dependency and the criticality of the magnets. So up to 2023, magnet manufacturers in the European Union are forced that at least 25% of the material have to consist of a recycled material. And also some other things like the eco-design requirements for the Sustainable Products Directive or the Dutch Product Passport will increase the sustainability of the magnets. So for example, also manufacturers of application, which includes magnets, are forced that they really show where the magnets are located in the devices, in the applications, and where, for example, what is the chemical composition of the magnets. Yes, and this now leads to the terms of recycling concepts and reuses, which again is one way to decrease dependency and then decrease the criticality. And there, if we are talking about recycling, you have two mainstreams. One is the functional or short loop recycling, and the other is the elemental or long loop recycling. And here, for example, you can see how the manufacturing, starting with the mining, then the manufacturing after you have the raw materials for the magnets itself. And now we have the end magnet or the end of life magnet. And if we are doing the long loop recycling, for example, like hydrometallurgical processes or other chemical intensive processes, we can go back to a mixture of rare earth concentrates or the individual rare earths. We can get fresh metals. And then, of course, would have a complete freedom to operate what kind of magnet material once you produce. However, it's more expensive, and again, you need a lot of energy for this. If you think about the short loop recycling, you would get directly go back with the end of life magnet, either to strip casting or the hydrogen decrypitation process. I will show in some slides in more detail. And then with this, you have to stay in the alloy itself. Nevertheless, it's less expensive, it's also faster, and you would need less energy. Nevertheless, depending on the input stream, one or the other recycling technique is more useful. So we are thinking that both techniques will really be available on the market. Now here you can see in the hydrogen decrypitation process. So here we have a magnet, and if we apply hydrogen on it, the hydrogen will penetrate into material. You can see on the picture on the left that the magnet itself consists in general of two phases. One is the rare earth iron bond phase, the magnetic phase. The other is the neodymium or rare earth rich phase. Both phases will pick up hydrogen. It comes to different volume expansion, and that is why the embrittlement takes place. And this powder afterwards can be jet melted to fine powder, and you can make new magnets out of it. Here I want to show a study where we have a look on applications from micromobility. So you can see hoverboard, the e-scooter, a Pedelec. And from these devices, we took out the magnets and did characterization of the magnets, measured magnetic properties. You can see here. And then the idea was to recycle magnets and put it again in the motors. And we did not recycle the magnets from these devices. We took magnets from other input streams because this is a more realistic scenario to deal with different input streams. For example, used magnets from MRI scanners or from pumps. And you can see on the picture on the left for the Pedelec, in the end, we were very lucky. So the MRI scanner, large 10 kilogram magnet, we just could clean it, cut out the magnet with the desired dimensions, put it in the device. So it's a reuse, which puts the best way, obviously. And in the other terms, we recycled the pumps with different different recycling rates to get the same properties like the primary magnets for the e-scooter and the hoverboard. And what you can see, obviously, the motor performance is the same, independent if you use a primary magnet or a recycled magnet. Here also some other study I want to show. Here we invested traction motors, and to get out the traction motors, we always or usually doing thermodigmatization, so meaning heating up to 400 degrees C over Curie temperature. The magnet properties will go on or will disappear, and then you can more easy get the magnets out. Usually the magnets are fixed with a glue, and what you can see here with the loss of a hazard of mass, that there are some glues used for fixing magnets in traction motors with a higher thermal resistance compared to the magnet. And of course, it makes no sense to have using a glue which have a higher thermal resistance compared to the magnet itself. So here, clear design for recycling approach would be please just use another glue. Then, of course, also before we think thinking about recycling or how we get the magnets back, we also have to do another step. We have to think about the dismantling. So there also we have installed a robot room because labor costs in Europe are very high. So the process of automation should be also as high as possible to decrease labor costs. And also some other dismantling techniques, like maybe more robust dismantling, could be used here. For example, you can see our impact mill. There we crushed a paddy leg motor. And there also is the idea to get different material fraction bed. Not only the magnets has a high value. There you can see also alumina fractions, copper fraction, and yeah, how you choose your settings. You maybe end up with a more unsorted or better sorted material in the end. And then also you have to think about the sorting. There our colleagues in Alzenau have a large sorting device on a pilot line scale, of course, where they also can sort out the material. So not only magnet materials from alumina or copper, for example, also for the magnet itself. We also have to be sure that we don't have other magnet materials like, I don't know, alnico, ferrites, or samarium cobalt, for example. Yes, and with this, I want to come to the main topic of my talk, which is the sustainable manufacture of iridium iron-borne magnets. And with this, I will start with the conventional manufacture of synthetic magnets. And as you can see here, so you are usually starting with the strip casting. In case of strip casting, you use your raw materials, and then you melt them up inductively to temperatures about 1,400 degrees C. Then you cast them to water cooled copper wheel with quenching rates of about 1,000 degrees C per second. And then you end up with so-called strip cast flakes. Those strip cast flakes, then you can put in the hydrogen decrepitation furnace to activate this hydrogen decrepitation to get the coarse powder. This coarse powder afterwards you can put in the jet mill. Then you get a single micro-sized jet mill powder. This powder then can be aligned and pressed in a magnetic field to get the red bodies, a green bodies. The green bodies then were sintered and post-sintered annealed. And if necessary, you coat it to the desired side, do some shining, and of course some coating if necessary. Here you can see the facilities of our institute in Hanau, and of course all of you are very welcome to visit our device, our pilot line. So we're located about 30 minutes away from Frankfurt Airport. Here you, for example, can see such large MRI device, magnet. Here several recycled end-of-life magnets we are using for our recycling approaches. And again, the video, independent if you are using fresh strip cast flakes or recycled material, you have to do hydrogen decrepitation, get the coarse powder, then the coarse powder has to be jet milled. And after jet milling, at least you have to be careful about the powder because it's very sensitive oxidization. It's a pyrophoric material. Also, most likely cobalt is in it. So you have to take care that no contact with oxygen will take place. Here you can see our sintering furnace. And of course, after sintering, and we have to measure the magnetic properties, and also the microstructural properties are very important if we're talking about neodym iron borne based magnets. That's why we also have a very huge SEM. Yes, so why are permanent magnets really critical? It's about the usage of the heavy rare earth elements like dysprosium or terbium. And you have to add the heavy rare earth elements like dysprosium or terbium if you want to enhance the temperature resistance. And you have to enhance the temperature resistance if you think about applications which are running at elevated temperatures, like traction motors, for example, of electric vehicles. So their operating temperatures up to 200 degrees C may occur. And if you add the heavy earth elements, you can increase the coercivity, this is the resistance against demagnetization, because this heavy earth have a higher magnetocrystalline anisotropy. However, if you would put them simply in the alloy, you would decrease the remanence because the heavy earth elements coupled antiferromagnetically with the iron in the sublattice. Also the price of the heavy earth elements is quite higher compared to the light rare earths. And that's why in the early 2000s, the so-called crane boundary diffusion process was developed. And there you have a final sintered magnet, and this final sintered magnet you coat with a heavy rare earth source. And then to do a heat treatment, you activate a diffusion process. And finally, you end up with a so-called core shell structure, which develops. And there, the heavy rare earth elements are located at the outer regions of the cranes. And so you can increase the coercivity without decreasing the remanence significantly. However, since it's a diffusion-driven process, you are limited to magnet thicknesses less than 10 millimeter. So here we can see a schematic view of it. So we have our 2-4-in-1 magnetic cranes surrounded by our rare earth rich phase. And if we have this sintered magnet coated with a heavy rare earth source, then activate the thermal diffusion treatment, the crane boundary phase becomes liquid, the heavy rare earth elements can infiltrate through the crane boundaries, and we end up with the core shell structure. Here on top, you see a real SEM images. That's a typical looking like microstructure of a crane boundary fused magnet. So the dark blue cranes are free of heavy rare earth. This is a heavy rare earth free cores, and they are surrounded from this brighter blue, this heavy rare earth containing shells. So now I want to talk about the two-powder method approach. So the two-powder method approach is another process for crane bonding modification. It was initially developed by the TU Darmstadt, our colleagues of Functional Materials Department, under the leadership of Professor Gutfleisch. And together with them, we have a project in the last years. We also developed the technology further, also bring it from lab scale to pilot line scale. And here the idea is that you have two different rare earth iron bond based powders, which you are blending. And one powder is heavy rare earth free, we are calling main phase powder. And this powder is at least 50 to 100% larger in the particle size. And this we blend with a heavy rare earth containing, we are calling it anisotropy powder. And then during the sintering process, the smaller anisotropy powder particles are assumed to turn early into liquid phase, surround the main phase powder particles, and you also can end up with the formation of a core shell structure. And the advantages compared to the crane boundary diffusion process are that you would not need any additional heavy rare earth source, you would not need any additional coating step, you would not need any additional cost and time-intensive free treatment, and you are not limited in the magnet size, so you can save a lot of cost. And what I learned after university is that the best or the most important materials property is the price. So here I want to show you the current results of our recent study, manuscripts under preparation. We can hope we can publish it soon. And of course, then you can show a lot of more detail. Nevertheless, for this study, we engineered thick powders. So two heavy three main phase powders. They have a particle size in the D50 value of 5.4 micrometer, 3.7 micrometer. And then we also produced four heavy rare earth containing anisotropy powders. You can see here, there we produced a particle size in D50 value of 2.5, 3.1, 3.6, and 4.0 micrometer in the D50 value. Further, all anisotropy powder particles include 10 weight% dysprosium. And if we blend the materials of the main phase powder and the anisotropy powder with a ratio of 80 to 20, we end up with 2 weight% in the final powder mixtures, which is the same like the dysprosium content in the final sintered magnets. Here you can see the best magnetic properties we achieved by blending the larger main phase powder with the anisotropy powders of 3.1 and 3.6 micrometer in the D50 value. And there we observed a coercivity gain of 350 kilo-amp per meter. And if we now have a look on the powder mixtures with the finer main phase powder, there we got the bad properties if we are blending it with the anisotropy powder of 2.5 micrometer in the 50 value, and we observed a coercivity gain of 450 kiloamp per meter. And yeah, we are assuming that the 100 kiloamp per difference is related to the particle size effect, meaning that smaller grain sizes lead to higher coercivity because smaller grains have less surface. That's why the probability for surface defects also less, and surface defects are assumed to be the reason where magnetization reversal may nucleate. So then, of course, we also have a look via SEM. We are interested in the microstructure. So here we can see the microstructure of the sintered magnets, based on the powder blends from the larger main phase powder with all the anisotropy powders. And now on the right, you can see the microstructures in terms of SEM and EDX of the main finer main phase powder, also with all of the anisotropy powders. And what we observed is the core shell structure was visible for all of the magnets. So we have less signal in the core sides, increased signal of dysprosium in the shell sides. However, what was really unexpected that we observed a cross section for all magnets. So even if the particle size of the main phase powder is in the same range like the anisotropy powder, like here, or even if the anisotropy powder, main phase powder is smaller compared to the anisotropy powder, which is not in the framework of the two powder approach anymore. That's why we have more log in the thicknesses of the grains, the cores, and the shells. And there we observed that the average grain size after sintering the mixtures with the larger main phase powder is also larger compared to the finer main phase powder. This is what is expected. If you have a larger powder, you will end up with a larger grain size in the microstructure. Then the same trait we observed for the core thicknesses of the core shell. However, the shell thicknesses are in the similar range for all sintered magnets, independent of the initial powders. And so the thicknesses of the shells is assumed to be only related to the presence of the anisotropy powder particles. And that's why the mechanism of the core shell development is assumed to be the precipitation of the dysprosium atoms during the sintering procedure. But of course, to have better results and more data, we need more experiments. And also, we want to work on simulations aspect to better support these investigations. Now I want to talk about overcoming the size limitation of the grain powder V diffusion process by using the powder method that is a large advantage. And then for this, we use the same powders. So the large main phase powder of 5.4 micrometer, we blended it with the anisotropy powder of 3.6 micrometer and produced a huge 350 gram magnets, like you can see here on the bottom. So directly after sintering with the sintering skin, and then of course after cleaning and after coating, you can see here the big magnet. And the magnets have dimensions of approximately 45 millimeter in height and 40 millimeter in diameter. From these big magnets, we cut out smaller samples, like you can see here. They have dimensions of 5 millimeter in height and 12 millimeter in diameter. And then if you compare it with the small fabricated magnet from the slides I showed before, we can see that we reached the same magnetic properties. So here we end up with a remanence of 1.34 tesla, a coercivity of 1,408 kiloamp per meter, and the energy product of 336 kilojoule per cubic meter. And also, if we cut out samples from different positions of one big magnet, we can see that we have really homogeneous magnetic properties throughout the whole magnet's volume. Here also, we had a look via SEM and EDX investigations, and what you can see here, also that the core shell structure is clearly developed. So again, in the core sites, we have less signal of dysprosium in terms of EDX. We have increased signal in the shell regions. Opposite trend is observed for neodymium, and also EDX line scans underline that we have the core shell structure. Yes, then afterwards we also did some atom probe tomography measurements with our colleague from Max Planck Institute in Düsseldorf. And atom probe tomography is a very high advanced characterization method. So with this method, in principle, you are able to detect almost every atom, and then you can build up so-called reconstruction maps, like you can see here. So really each point corresponds to one magnet. And here we observe them different positions on the material. What you can see here on A is that we have some sample prepared and measured in the shell regions. So if you think about two grains, we have two grains, then of course we have a core and the shell, and the grains itself are connected with the grain boundary phase, and in the grain boundary phase, kappa is enriched. And if we have this kappa enriched signal in our reconstruction maps, we can be sure that we are really in the shell regions. On the bottom, we have some sample prepared in the core regions. So here we are not having any increased kappa signal, for example, so we can be sure that we are in the core regions. And if we now compare the chemical concentrations of position A and 2 from the shell regions with position 3 in the core regions, we can clearly see that we have, the increased dysprosium signal and less dysprosium signal, for example, in the core region. In the shell region, sorry. Yes, now I want to show you some life cycle assessment approaches we did so far. So here you can see the manufacturing process of all the manufacturing waste, so the conventional magnet manufacturing, the manufacturing if you're applying also the crane bond diffusion process, and if you're applying the two-powder method. So in terms of the conventional manufacturing, you have the strip catching, the HD, the hydrogen decrypitation, you have the jet milling, compaction and alignment, sintering, cutting, polishing and cleaning, corrosion coating, at the end, you have to magnetize the magnet. If you apply the crane bond diffusion process, you have to add the coating method. In our case, we have the physical vapor deposition in-house, sputtering, and then you have to do the diffusion heat treatment, and again, polishing and cleaning. If you are thinking about the two-powder method, Yes, of course, you have to produce two powders. However, you only need them share-wise. So that's why the only step which is additional is the mixing itself. And if we now have a look in the climate change potential in terms of the CO2 equivalents per kilogram, first of all, we have to say that our measured values are 10 times higher compared to industry. However, this is not really instrumental. So we have a pilot line. We are mirroring all the real industrial production processes, but our devices are not generated or engineered to do mass production. So this means we have to compare our values relatively. And there we can clearly show that roughly about 8% higher CO2 equivalents per kilogram, you need more for the additional crane boundary diffusion steps. And again, this only valid for thin magnets. So life cycle assessment on the first step demonstrates the energy saving potential of the two-powder method. So now I want to come to the summarize of my talk. First of all, the investigation of different particle sizes for main phase powder and anisotropic powders was shown, and there we observed coercivity gain up to 450 kiloampere per meter by having 2 weight percent dysprosium in the material, whereby the shelf thickness isn't the same for all magnets, so the Korschelt development in terms of two-powder method is assumed to be the precipitation of heavy worth LMMs from the anisotropic powder. Then we produced 350 gram huge magnets with a homogeneous Korschelt structure through the whole volume. And again, that's not possible by using the crane boundary diffusion process. And also another big topic where my colleague Chicha Lin is working on it in his PhD thesis. And there the idea is to use the rare earth baskets or to utilize the rare earth balance, which means you have overproduction, for example, of cerium lanthanum, because if you think about mining of rare earths, you always have to mine all rare earths together. And since you are not using so many cerium lanthanum, you have them on stock. They are also cheaper compared to neodymium or dysprosium. However, the magnetic properties by using cerium-2-iron-14-boron is less compared to neodymium-2-iron-14-boron. But by using the two-powder method, the approach is that you engineer your shell, so your main phase powder, your main phase powder with increased cerium content. And if you're now using an anisotropic powder with a higher content of neodymium compared to the main phase powder, you could recover some of the losing properties. And so you can, again, recover some of the magnetic hardening. Yeah, further, I just showed that life cycle assessment shows the CO2 equivalent saving potential of the two-powder method compared with the crane boundary diffusion process. And yes, the next steps is to adjust the heavy earth contents in the anisotropic powder. So up to now, we always use 10 weight percent of heavy earth content in the material, in the AP powders. Of course, we could think about having 20 or 30% of heavy earths in the AP powder, which would be all the earths consist of heavy powder, and then, of course, change the shares of AP and MP. Yeah, here's a short overview about recent published publications in our work in terms of sustainable manufacturing processes and recycling approaches. Also some studies we published so far. And yes, with this I want to thank you for attention and I'm open for questions. Please.
I can go to the pult. Thank you for the presentation. This is Koen Vervaken from MECHEM. My question is, how critical is the mixing process in the two-powder method? And have you seen any inhomogeneities in magnetic field distribution from real manufactured magnets? Have you measured such field distribution maps?
We did not measure the field distribution maps. However, it's uncritical, so we are blending it. We don't have an pickup of oxygen, for example. We don't see some unusual shapes in our particle size distribution. So that is, yeah.
So you expect that the fields will follow the particle distribution? Should be pretty so. Homogeneous. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the nice talk. So my name is Emmanuel Kasotakis. I'm from the University of Duisburg-Essen, PhD student. I have a question regarding the hydrogen decarbonization process that you mentioned. How fast is it? So does it need the sample to stay in this environment for long, or is it a quick procedure?
I would say it's quick in terms that you can, of course, easily include in production.
You can change the time by applying higher force or increased temperature. And I now have a look. So it's not really critical, I would say. Also, it depends on the rare earth content itself and the material, how fast it will react.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So the hydrogen process is usual in magnet manufacturing, it's conventional technology. Okay, if no further questions, yeah, I want to thank you again. So tomorrow, my colleague Mario Schönfeld is the head of our department, have a talk about recycling, if you're more interested in more detail in this topic. And yes, I hope, looking forward to discussion afterwards. So thanks. You again have a nice show.